Rowland, good morning.
May it please the court, other than Dan McKinney's perjured self-serving testimony, there's simply no evidence that Mr. Hill controlled Dan McKinney or that he was hierarchically superior. Mr. Hill was unemployed and in debt. Officers Logan and Wise were experienced counterfeiters. When Officer Logan recruited Hill, Hill had no ability to cash large counterfeit checks, so he recruited his former boss, McKinney, who had a large business and a bank account. Once McKinney was in the scheme, the fake checks went directly from Officer Wise, who created them, to Dan McKinney, who deposited them. Dan McKinney was no knave. He was a successful businessman. He had given Steve Hill a summer job. He allowed Steve Hill to puff and talk big in front of the other participants, but he was certainly well aware that he owned the business, that he owned the bank
account. How did McKinney get into the scheme?
He was recruited by Steve Hill. Steve Hill.
And that's a significant factor under the commentary of the guidelines, right? It is specifically mentioned as,
yes,
as a factor. Okay.
Officer Logan recruited Wise and Hill, and Hill recruited Officer McKinney. But that isn't enough. He has to control a person in the scheme, and he has to be hierarchically superior.
Didn't Hill tell Wise that what Wise was doing didn't compare to what Hill was doing on his end of the deal?
Well, yes. Hill frequently, told the other participants that, what he was doing was so difficult.
That was just bragging and not.
Absolutely. He didn't, in fact, do anything except provide
the proceeds. Who decided the division of the proceeds, which is another significant factor, right?
The only testimony on who divided the proceeds was from Dan McKinney, who said that, of course, Dan McKinney got the cash,
right,
and that he divided it according to instructions by Steve Hill. Dan McKinney was found to have perjured his testimony, and his testimony is really patently absurd. He testified that he had no idea that this was a counterfeiting scheme. He thought that these checks were Steve Hill's investments in his business. He didn't know why he was purchasing cashier's checks for strangers. And when he said that we have to do it right, when he met with these strangers and said we have to do it right or the feds will run in, he still didn't know that this was a counterfeiting scheme. And the district court found that his testimony was perjured.
Was there any other testimony on the division of proceeds?
No. There's a lot of telephone conversations between Steve Hill and Logan and Weiss where Steve Hill is trying to avoid the subject. McKinney has the money, so McKinney and perhaps his partner Hill have some degree of leverage because they actually have the cash in hand, since McKinney was the one who was able to cash the check. And so he does a lot of sort of wheedling and avoiding and discussion about the split. When they cheat Joe Wise out of his share of the money, he's got lots of excuses, which were lies.
But was there any other testimony on division of the proceeds?
What about this phone call, conference call with Hill and Wise on November 30th? Hill saying, "Let me get the whole thing. We'll just do the split when we get in front of each other. I ain't going to tell you until I get something rather." And he is telling them how it's going to be divvied up.
Actually, he's not telling them how it's going to be divvied up. He's saying, let's not decide now, we'll figure it out later. If he were the boss of this scheme, if he were Logan's boss and Wise's boss, he would tell them up front what the cut was. But he's constantly maneuvering.
The guidelines don't require that he be the boss, right? The language is an organizer, leader, manager, or supervisor, not the organizer, right? I mean, so,
right.
So
there can be multiple leaders.
Multiple bosses.
There also can be conspiracies where there is no leader.
Right.
There are just participants. And I would argue that that's the case here. The reason
we have to follow a clearly erroneous standard here, right? And so is it clearly erroneous to conclude that he recruited someone or that he divvied up the pot?
Well,
clearly erroneous?
The court, this is a mixed question of fact
right,
and law.
Right.
And so the court reviews for somewhere between... somewhere more akin to an abuse of discretion between clearly erroneous and...
But on the findings of fact, right.
It is not an error to say that he recruited McKinney.
Right.
We agree to that. He did.
And is it an error to say that he divvied up the...
Yes.
The first, it's an error. Why is it an error?
You've got, the only testimony on that matter
comes from
was
McKinney, right.
McKinney's perjured testimony. Even if he had...
And the district court couldn't make that sort of distinction that part of the testimony was uncreditable and other was creditable?
Perhaps the court could have, but it didn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got another phone call. Wait, and maybe this is the 15,000. No, wait a minute. I don't know which check it is, but on March 1st, 2005, after Wise says that his yield was lower than expected, because of taxes and fees, and Hill explained that his end of the transaction, that is Hill's, required significant effort and outlay. You got to remember what you're doing on your end and don't even compare, so forth. I mean, he's actually the one speaking to the East Coast people about why it was divvied up the way it was.
Right. That,
and
that,
you're saying
I mean,
that's not enough? I mean, he's
no,
not,
I mean,
not,
he's full of puffery. I mean, well, what did he do, actually? He provided Dan McKinney's name and bank account number. That's all he did. If he were the boss, it wouldn't be necessary for him to constantly be.
Where does it require that he be the boss? You keep saying that. Yeah, he wasn't necessarily the boss, but did he organize, lead, manage, or supervise?
He has to organize, lead, manage, or supervise at least one person, not just activity. So to make the finding that he deserves these 2 points, he has to have controlled someone, and in this case, Dan McKinney is the someone, and has to be hierarchically superior to that person. Even if he had determined the split, and we argue that the evidence is insufficient that he did, that alone would not qualify him for the adjustment. Even the split plus recruitment McKinney would not qualify him for the adjustment because he has to control a person. Officer Logan recruited him. Officer Logan recruited Wise. That doesn't mean that Officer Logan necessarily was controlling his participation, and certainly Logan did not get that adjustment. The unfairness of his designation as a manager in this scheme, I think, is illustrated by the various sentences. Joe Wise, who cooperated extensively, was given probation. Officer Logan, who agreed to cooperate and then breached his agreement by informing the dirty cops who he was supposed to be helping to investigate of the investigation, got 15 months. Dan McKinney, who perjured himself, got 24 months. Mo got 26 months. And Steve Hill got 46 months. Steve Hill is not, and all of these men had no criminal record, so they were all in criminal history category 1. He is not twice as culpable as these other people, and he was the only person who's not experienced in counterfeiting checks, who's not experienced in business. He's a pathetic hanger-oner who's, you know, trying to get a piece of this deal. Again, if he had been the had a leadership role, he could have announced a split, but he's constantly sort of maneuvering and trying to avoid that. The reason all four of them have to show up at the bank in Las Vegas is because no one is the boss, and they're all trying to, you know, put their hands on the money as it comes in. I mean, there was no other reason for all four of them.
Remind me, what share did he get of the proceeds?
When they went to the bank in Las Vegas, yeah, they didn't actually cash the check.
No, but when they divvied up the proceeds, what percentage did he get?
When they got the proceeds of the $15,000 check, he got $5,500. McKinney got $5,500. Joe Wise got $2,500. And Logan got $1,500. And their excuse was, McKinney and Hill's excuse was that they had to pay taxes and they had to reserve money for taxes and they had to pay fees from the previous unsuccessful check, which, both of which I think were lies. Certainly the fees was a lie. The fee was $4. So he got about a third of that check and basically cheated Joe Wise. Joe Wise wasn't...
Who convened the meeting? Who was the one that called them together to say, we've got to meet to divvy up the money to get the proceeds? Well, it was Hill, right?
He
called the meeting, and they came.
No, he came. Steve Hill flew to Washington. Dan McKinney bought Steve Hill a ticket, right, and got him in a hotel room, and he came to Washington and gave Logan and Wise their share. Mm-hmm. Not a fair share, but their share. Later, they all met in a hotel in Las Vegas, but they didn't actually get any money then. And I actually can't answer the question of who suggested that they all
go to Las Vegas. Well, I thought the East Coast guys said, we're coming out the next time because we want to be there when the money
good thinking
is received. And the picture I got was of four people who didn't trust each other, and that's at least the two East Coast guys going out to the West Coast and so forth. So it's your position that even though recruitment and divvying up the proceeds are two examples of how someone can be a supervisor or manager, neither one of those or in combination is enough unless there's other testimony or evidence of a supervisory role.
Of a hierarchically superior role and controlling a person, not just activity.
Well,
he had no...
That's just one of the factors that in the comment, to the degree of control and authority exercised over others. That is definitely a factor to look at, but that's not necessary. You can have the other factors and not have that.
I think this court has held in United States versus Quigley and other cases that it is necessary. And that it is, for example, in the Quigley case, Mrs. Quigley was quite busy, I don't want to use the word organizing, but sort of orchestrating. I think that's the court term the court uses. She's busy orchestrating all of these people to do this land flip scheme, but she has no control over any person, and she isn't hierarchically superior to any person. Here, Steve Hill, who has no ability to create checks or cash checks, who has no experience with counterfeiting and no experience with business, is not hierarchically superior to the other men, although he certainly, you know, talks big and tries to keep himself in the game. The only reason he's in the game at all is that he has a friend who owns a business and a bank account. Once he introduced Joe Wise to Dan McKinney, both he and Logan were superfluous. Joe Wise could send the checks to Dan McKinney. Dan McKinney could cash them. And Steve Hill is desperately trying to stay in the game and to say, I have some role here. He's claiming to have some stake in Dan McKinney's business, but he did not, in fact, have any stake in that, and Dan McKinney knew that. Dan McKinney didn't think that...
You've gone over your time, so we'll give you a minute in response.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Chasson?
So can I ask you to address the control over others issue? What's your case that that Hill, in fact, exercised control over others? Because Quigley does appear to require that.
Yes. Good morning, Your Honor. Sarah Chasson.
I'm sorry. Excuse
me. The evidence of control comes in two forms. It comes first from appellant's spoken words and then from his actions. We've talked about a lot of the conversations that were recorded already during appellant's argument. But there's one very important quote that so far hasn't made it onto the record, and that is a statement that appellant made on March 11th of 2005, where he said in a recorded conversation to Joe Wise, "Dan, don't do nothing unless I'm there." And that, in fact, not only was an assertion of authority over Dan McKinney, but an assertion that is backed over by his actions. Let's talk a little bit about how the proceeds were divided, because again, there's been one critical step that has not yet been brought to this court's attention. While there is testimony from Dan McKinney that it was appellant who told him how to divide up the proceeds, what happened later is important as well, because Dan McKinney went to his bank account and then turned the proceeds over to Hill for Hill to apportion the proceeds out to others. So that action demonstrated that McKinney was doing what he was told by Hill, who asserted to the others that he was going to tell them how much he was going to get. And in fact, that's exactly what happened. He caused Dan McKinney to act out his instructions. That is an entirely fair statement from the record. The factual finding supporting that from Judge Kessler is supported by the record and is not clearly erroneous. So this court must accept her finding as correct. The other evidence of control falls along the lines of what has been demonstrated as an appropriate factor to look at through the guidelines commentary, the recruitment of McKinney, which we've discussed, and to which there is now a stipulation. There is no factual finding that could be erroneous. They agree that appellant recruited another. But he also recruited another with a very specialized skill, which is a factor that this court in Brody said was significant. Dan McKinney brought something to the table that nobody else did. He had a bank account that lots of checks went through. It made it easy to wash a counterfeit check through Dan McKinney's cleaning services account.
Well, didn't Mrs. Quigley recruit buyers? And you'd have to have those buyers.
Yes, she did recruit buyers. But in significant contrast to the Quigley case, Judge Kessler in the Quigley case found that Ms. Quigley did not manage or supervise any of those buyers. And it's, in fact, if you look at how a mortgage scheme functions, it is possible for that to have happened. She could just have brought buyers into the fold and given them the paperwork necessary to fill out the phony mortgage fraud applications without actually controlling them. I think findings likely could have been made going the other way, but Judge Kessler looked at the evidence and decided, in fact, she did not supervise the buyers, whereas in other schemes, such as the Brody scheme, we did actually find that kind of management.
I didn't realize,
control.
So she was the judge in Quigley?
Yes, she was the sentencing judge in Quigley.
Okay.
But here, in contrast to Quigley, she made a specific finding based upon record evidence that is not disputed that Mr. McKinney was, in fact, under the control of appellant. The split of the proceeds, the recruitment of McKinney, the statement, "Dan, don't do nothing unless I'm there," is all ample evidence to support Judge Kessler's sentencing. And I would just note for the court that in Gaviria, which also this court has affirmed a two-point enhancement, there was significantly less. The district court relied merely upon an inference of recruitment and an inference of control that was found just from the logical actions of the co-conspirators. Here we have blatant assertions of authority over another that were consistent with the actions of everybody else in the conspiracy.
Isn't it also reasonable, though, to interpret the divvying up of the cash proceeds as just that he and McKinney got more because they actually cashed the checks? They were the ones that, not necessarily showing any leadership, but just that they did it.
It is possible. That is one possible view of the evidence. It's certainly not compelled by the evidence. And Judge Kessler, after hearing the evidence in this trial and being aware of the facts that accompanied the other's plea agreements decided that was in fact not the case. And when she relied upon the recorded statements of appellant to say that he controlled Dan and looked at the facts as they unfolded before her, it was entirely appropriate for her to conclude that McKinney in fact
was controlled by Collins. Why did the probation office come to a different conclusion here? What was...
Well, the probation office appears to have relied on the fact that he joined the conspiracy later as a fact that did not demonstrate his leadership or authority over another. And I think that's wrong. This court's cases have said, in fact, that that's not, you can have an ongoing conspiracy yet still control another within it. The question is, looking at a particular action within either the charged conduct or the relevant conduct, did you control another participant? It doesn't even have to be another person who is convicted. So I think that looking at when somebody has joined the conspiracy is not talismanic of leadership. Again, in Gaviria, he recruited somebody else into an ongoing conspiracy. If the court has no further questions, I will submit on our brief. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right. Why don't you take a minute?
Thank you. I just want to make two brief points. One is that Mrs. Quigley did not just recruit buyers. She also selected the properties. She recruited the appraisers and told them how much the price was so that they would appraise at the price that she wanted. And she profited more from the scheme than the other participants. And the second point is that I don't actually have the PSR with me, but I don't believe that the probation office just relied on the fact that he entered a scheme that already existed. The probation office did not find that he controlled another person.
All right. Thank you.